Hello and welcome to today's episode of Torkum Talk. Today we have a special guest who actually flew all the way from Washington, D.C. to be on the show with us today. His name is Dan Lesniak. He is a self-made millionaire, owns three businesses, an author, podcast host. The guy knows how to do it and he knows how to do it fast. And I dove into how he operates, how he ticks. Afterwards, we actually shot an episode for his podcast. So be looking out for that on his Instagram at Dan Lesniak for when that drops. So without further ado, please enjoy our rendition of the episode here on Torkum Talk.
Yeah, so content really became top of mind for me about 11 months ago, almost a year ago, when I met with Gary Vee in DC and just realized how important it was. And he put it into terms that no one else yet had done for me. Prior to that meeting, I probably thought, like a lot of people do, it's sort of something to check the box.
Yeah, what were the terms that he was saying?
He just got into like the cost to get in front of 1,000 people there versus Google PPC versus traditional.
Where's there?
Like on social media.
Okay, on Instagram, Facebook.
Right.
Yeah.
So he painted this picture of, hey, right now, $10 to $20 to get in front of 1,000 people. Cost per impression, 1,000 impressions. On stories, it's even lower.
Sure.
And then he said, look, I remember when Google PPC was that price. And then all of a sudden, a few years later, it went up to like $80 to $100 overnight. And he tied it back to his parents' wine business and said, look, on Wikipedia, it says blah, 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 blah. He took his parents' wine business from $3 million to $60 million. I hate that because had I gone all in on PPC instead of just a little bit, when it was still cheap, it would have said $3 million to $500
million. Mm-hmm. So
that made it pretty darn clear. Then I thought in my own mind, like, okay, 1,000 people who get my postcard, that costs $500. So that's like $15-$20 versus $500.
Mm-hmm.
And I get data on it, right?
You're able to retarget them. You're able to see, for the most part, who they are. The people that you're targeting can be done by many different ways, from custom audiences being something that you upload. As you're well aware, but a lot of listeners aren't, like, you basically take a list of your entire email list and now you can be hitting those people on something that they are looking at. You might have a list of 10,000 emails, but you also know your open rate on a good day is 15%. Mm-hmm. On a normal day, well, maybe for you, but normal email marketers are playing from 8 to 15%.
Is that the norm?
Yeah, that's the norm. And if you're crushing it, you're getting in the 20s, 30s, really crushing it, as you know. So you take that. I'm not saying give up on email,
right?
But I am saying, what if you can all of a sudden put all those emails into a custom audience that's on Facebook and Instagram where they live, and Messenger and WhatsApp, because Facebook owns all that. And now when your email goes out talking about, hey, I'm Dan running at you, or whatever it is you're trying to sell, they're now, that's already opened. It's not an email where they saw the subject line. They're like, yeah, you know, pass. It's the email's open in their newsfeed, and that's what you're seeing. So you see the entire image. Like, even if your thumb keeps on going, you still see the logo, name, maybe you pick up a couple of things in the copy and the image or video. Like, that did make an impression. In some cases, you read the whole thing. So I'm totally with you that, but that's where I think a lot of people get mistaken about paid content then, right? Because what you're talking about, what Gary was telling you, that's paid content.
Right.
But what about the organic stuff? Like, where do you see the value in that? Because you're constantly putting out organic content too on Instagram mostly. And now I'm seeing you get more and more on LinkedIn as well. But why are you doing that if you're not putting money behind those specific ones?
Yeah. I mean, that's, we do both. Like, why not take the free, use your paid to build up your audience? Then they get to see your organic most. But there's a huge difference on most platforms on what you get organically versus paid, especially with Facebook. Like,
yeah.
The difference between paid and organic there is, and Instagram is humongous.
Well,
LinkedIn, I've seen a little bit more parity. Like, my LinkedIn organic, I feel like it gets seen by more people.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see any reason why not to do both.
What are you typically putting behind a like Instagram post for boosting? How much money?
It just depends on the post and the what the purpose is, you know, if it's our personal one or one of our business ones. So if it's for one of our businesses, like to attract buyers or sellers in the Washington, D.C., you know, Virginia, Maryland area, that has a different budget and threshold than if it's for our coaching platform or our personal one. So they all have kind of different thresholds and purposes. You know, on my personal one, I like to look at the, my personal one is set on Instagram is set up like a business account. So I'll look at the analytics. I'll see how many people have saved it, shared it, viewed my profile and followed. If I think the results are good there, I'll put like $20 behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll see, okay, how many people followed me after spending that $20? And if the number is good, I crank it up and I'll run it for longer until the number goes down.
Okay.
On the real estate side, you know, it's more, okay, how much money did it take to get a buyer or a seller to opt in, and what kind of results did we get from there? And on Facebook and Instagram, we're getting leads anywhere from $15 to $30 for buyers or sellers.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to you getting followers on Instagram, what's the overall view that you see that on connecting towards like a new buyer or seller for you? Are you who are you targeting first off when you're doing like, hey, this is a basic post about me and I'm gonna put more money behind it? Who's your target?
I do a mix. This just depends on the message. If it's more toward the coaching and investing stuff we do, it'll be a broader national audience that I think has a real estate interest. If it's something more about our real estate team or for real estate agents to join our team, I'll do it more locally in the DC, you know, Maryland, Virginia area.
Okay. And so then when did you start realizing that, hey, what Gary Vee was saying to me, actually it's working?
It took a couple months. So we left that meeting and I was like, all right, I'm going to cut $10,000 of direct mail and put it all into Facebook and Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably took about 2 or 3 months to really start gaining traction. At first, it's like anything you do, you know, nothing's going to happen overnight typically.
Yeah.
And the people that have the most success are the ones that can get through that period of
this isn't growth. Working and kind of, yeah.
Right. The you got to think of it like success is usually a hockey stick type curve where the effort is going in, time is going in. But it's not till a few months in where you get this boom, explosive growth. And I would say at about the second month in, people were saying like, gosh, we see you everywhere. Like we see you all over the place. And then like the third or fourth month in, we just had a bang out month of December. Like that's usually a slow month for us. The prior to December, we averaged 20 deals on our team. And you know, we're a fairly big team. Before we met with Gary, we were already at 200 million, a little over. That December, we went from 20 deals to 86, I think, 82.
Wow.
And 50 million.
Wow.
In the month of December, slowest month, one of the slowest months.
Right.
And it was our best month ever. We didn't beat it again until May.
Huh.
It took a while to
December of 2018?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we finished the year up 50% overall, and most of it was because of Q4 growth as a result of a mid Q3 meeting with Gary.
So, what's your advice to people in business that are trying to, you know, they get it. They might be on LinkedIn and they might be on, or they are on LinkedIn, they are on Facebook and Instagram, and they hear this kind of stuff from Gary. Now they're hearing it from you. They hear it from other, key players on the, you know, just keep on grinding, and they might do a little bit and then they drop out. What do you say? Just keep going? Or do you say, well, this is what you did wrong? Or what's the main thing? Have you heard people complain to you about this?
Oh, all the time. People say, you hear it all the time with, and it's not just with social media. It's with any marketing or sales or business. They say like, yeah, that doesn't work in my market, or that doesn't work here because, and you start to hear the excuses. And you know, I think overall the same principles work everywhere. It just might take minor tactical adjustments to make them work. And it just takes staying in the game long enough and making the adjustments along the way to get there. And most people just don't do it long enough.
What are the adjustments that you were making in the beginning of the game to when it started to pick up?
We didn't make a ton, really.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've tweaked landing pages. We've tweaked funnels. We've added to it. So at first we didn't have, we had like old, old email follow-ups for when people opted in. Then we tweaked it, right? Mm-hmm. I wrote like 60 different emails in one weekend to just, I'm like, all right, shit, we got to change this. And I wrote like 10 different follow-up emails for 6 different campaigns. And we saw our results go up after that. We hired more people to help with videos. So we could.
Why are you writing emails and not some, I mean, you're big enough. Why don't you have a copywriter doing
it? We do.
Okay. But you're still, do you think there's something to be said behind you doing it and then a copywriter doing it?
Yeah. I mean, in the perfect world, I'd probably write none of it, but mm-hmm. we're not there yet. You know, we've got one really amazing guy that's helping us and, you know, some of it I do, some of it I just give him direction and he does. So but there's just a lot to be done. It's probably not enough for one person to handle.
That's one thing I'm starting to realize more and more. Before I go into this, Mitch, can you try to find, how can Mitch find throw up on the TV? Like you have some good content of you, Gary, and your wife talking like around a dinner table or something like that. What should he Google? Dinner table. It's you and Gary, your wife, and you guys are talking and he's dropping a ton of knowledge on you guys.
Yeah, my Twitter account has a pretty cool interaction from that event. It's not the dinner table one, but
okay. You mean the one where you're when you're talking in the audience?
Yeah.
And that is a good one too.
That's a pretty good one.
Dan Lesniak on Twitter. Yeah,
that, so that conversation was 5 months after my, you know, original talk with him, and that changed the way. Before then, I was pushing a lot of like the caption writing for my own personal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To other team members. But then after that conversation, yeah, I realized, well, shit, Gary's running a couple six or a couple like 9-figure businesses probably. And he's
writing his own Instagram,
writing
copy.
His own post.
He's not at writing his own LinkedIn copy though. And he's not writing his own Facebook copy and he's not writing his own YouTube copy. I mean, you don't have enough time.
Right. Yeah. He claimed Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah. Which is fine. And I can believe that, but like, I can just tell through like his grammar and punctuation on Instagram that this is not you writing this page, this long form copy you just put out on LinkedIn, which what I was getting at is like, it takes a lot of time. Like I'm getting into it just as you are. And just for my own personal brand, we have Mitch who's like editing nonstop micro content from stuff like this and stuff like just like natural stuff we have in the office. Clients come in and talk about it. There's all sorts of different content that we're constantly going through and finding as micro pieces. And then we have Chelsea, who's now working on helping like break down the long form. And then me distributing it on some of the platforms and then they're distributing it on some of them too. And it's still nowhere close to enough. I'm like, gosh, we have so much content now because Mitch freaking figured out the process to where he's pumping out 25 pieces of micro a day. I'm like, sweet. Now we have to distribute it all, right? Which is fine. We can do that. We can put like 4 pieces of content on each platform. That's doable. But we have to find the time and the process on how to do it and maybe even hire another person. I think Gary's staff is 30 people.
For his personal?
For his personal brand, it's 30 people. They're doing the copywriting, wow. All the graphics, everything. Oh, so here it is.
Is this the video that you were thinking of?
Yeah. This is it, right?
Yeah.
There should be.
15, 16, 20 people just work out your personal brand. Like, how do you make sure they're putting out stuff that matches your voice and what you want? Because I post everything and write all the copy. Guys, I post every single Instagram post and every tweet. It's me. I write the copy. You can't outsource a personal brand. It's a personal brand.
But he does. I mean, he does to an extent, right? Like when he says that because he'll have other posts where he's writing 30 posts. I mean, he has other posts where he's not writing 30 posts. Where he's talking about having 30 people on his personal brand team. So, I mean, call that what you want. I mean, it's an internal brand. I would love to see, though, that the other really super interesting one was the that dinner table discussion. I don't know where we'd find that with you and Gary from the one 5 months ago.
I don't think that made our YouTube, which it should, but
yeah, I would think that need to make your YouTube then be pinned and shit. Have that stuff at the top.
I think if you go to the Hyperfast Asian Facebook page, we've got something from that night pinned. Yeah, Hyperfast Asian Facebook. Try that one.
So,
I wish I wrote less of the copy.
Yeah, because where do you find all the time?
But it works better when I do it. Like when I send a recruiting email,
mm-hmm.
To 6,000 or 7,000 agents that have been getting my emails for months. Like if I do it, I'll get 33. I got 33% open rate on something I sent yesterday.
Mm. What's your subject line?
That one was confidentiality.
Oh.
So the day before I sent one out saying like, hey, we've never done this before. I forget what the headline was. I think the headline was in SFW in brackets, you know, not safe for work.
Mm-hmm.
We've never done this before, something like that. And it was, we were going to do like an open house, show behind the curtain, how our team works. And, you know, at the end of it, it was like, yeah, this won't be safe for your work doesn't want you to see this. It's not safe, right? You'll leave and come to us. And then the next day I sent one, confidentiality was the subject line. And the pitch was, hey, a lot of people have been asking, or worried that if they come to our open house, other agents will see them and people might know they're thinking about making a switch.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want a confidential meeting with me, just reply and I'll give you the same stuff just in a private one-on-one meeting. Right? This is for recruiting agents. And that one did really, really well. So I try to, when I'm going through my own email box, the reason I got the idea for that confidential is because Carrie, my wife, sent an email to like 4 or 5 people and the subject line was confidentiality. And it was just saying like, hey, we have this client that is uber sensitive, is buying a house, doesn't want to let people know, make sure you're, make sure you keep their confidentiality, which we would normally do anyway. But, you know, I just look for certain ones that
pop out more
in your box that you open right away. Like a really good one I've done before is insufficient funds notice. Like that one got like a 50% open rate and some mad people, but whatever, right? Like
what I think another good one would be shipping confirmed.
Yeah, order confirmation or your order is not confirmed.
Yeah.
Or you're missing, you know, we're missing this information about your order.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think anything that in my email that makes me open right away.
How can you do that?
How can I take that and then do a transition into something that will sell a product or service that I have to offer?
What do the angry people say when they are looking at the confidentiality stuff?
No one got angry that responded about that one, yeah. But the insufficient funds notice got a couple people responding. I think one person said it, I almost made them drive off the road.
Oh,
because it popped up on their Waze app or something. So then that turned into like more content. The next email the next day was subject line was
I made somebody drive off the road.
It was don't drive off the road reading this or something like that. So a lot of times the responses help generate the next thing. And I really my email philosophy shifted after seeing Grant Cardone at 10X. Earlier this year, he was talking about how he sold, you know, 35,000 tickets for this conference, which was
insane
at Marlins Stadium. It's probably the largest crowd they've had in that stadium ever.
Really?
Because they get like 10,000.
Yeah, nobody cares about the Marlins.
For baseball. So unless they've had a concert, they have not probably beaten that. And he went through like the number of calls his team made, the number of emails. And he basically said like, He would measure emails by unsubscribes and he would keep sending them until the unsubscribe rate jumped up and he'd be like, he'd ask his staff, what was the unsubscribe rate? And they'd say, it wasn't that high. And he'd, all right, hit the list again and just keep going until the unsubscribes.
So how many was he doing?
I mean, he sent millions of emails. Yeah. I'm sure his database is huge, but it was at least one a day, sometimes two a day, until you bought the 10X ticket. I think it kept going even after you bought it. So.
Well, yeah, you have upselling after that. Yeah, get the VIP if you didn't before. Meet Grant Cardone, 10 grand, and you know, whatever it's going to be. But
that's how much it was.
So what? Another thing I wanted to touch on. So this is like the social part of your play that has been blowing up your business even more. And it was big before that, but how did it all get started? Like, how did you start from not having a business and working in a job to having three that are going really well?
Yeah. So it all started, you know, coming out of business school. I thought I would go work for McKinsey or BCG Bain Consulting, one of these big strategy consulting firms. Uh-huh. And that was the business school dream. Like, go work for them, get a $150,000 job. You're going to travel Monday through Thursday to a factory plant in Ohio, tell them how to make their widget productions and sales like 2% better. And then someday after working these long weeks of Monday through Thursday on the road and super long hours, like, you know, you might become partner or maybe CEO, one of the companies you consulted, or mm-hmm. CEO, and yeah, make 300, 400 grand. And that was my dream coming out of business school. Sort of
just climb the ladder then.
The product of the system that you go to school so you can work hard so you can get into the next school.
And then eventually have a gold watch.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And it worked pretty well until all of a sudden it didn't. And, you know, I interviewed multiple times and they all told me, like, no, we think your technical ability is good enough, but we don't think you're good enough in the sales aspect. And a lot of consulting is sales. And I said, all right, what do I need to do to get another chance? They said, go get an experience that's different than what you've already been doing. So at the time I was buying my second home in the area, and I'd bought homes a lot because I had access to VA financing mm-hmm. from my time in the Navy. So I was used to buying and selling homes, always liked it. Was doing it the second time in Arlington and thought, you know what? I've done more than my realtor, lender, everyone else involved in this transaction. I'm just going to get my license and then I'll help a few family and friends. And so while I was in my defense contracting job, I had my real estate license. I started marketing to my condo building of 189 units, just a very, very narrow niche and focus, marketing to them, trying to get every buyer or seller that came up in this building. And it ended up being like the perfect target because it was year three or four of the building's existence. So there weren't a lot of established agents yet in there because no sales had started to, you know, really pick up, like resales anyway. Mm-hmm. And my timing was good. The target was good. And all of a sudden I started getting sales in that building. And I ended up getting about half of the sales that year in the building. And that led to a lot of adjacent, you know, condo, townhome, single family home in the area business as well. And a couple months in, I had more commission income lined up in the first couple months of the year than I was going to make income at my job.
Yeah.
Which was a good job. It was like $100,000 a job, but not much upside in it.
Yeah.
So I quit my job and then ended up selling over $22 million that year, netted like $350,000, which is like double what I would have made at McKinsey.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have to travel. It was all within like a 2-mile radius. Right. So
you're getting to not have to travel and do what you want to do. Was that scary at all for you?
Not really. I wasn't scared at all. I think the day I quit my job was one of the most liberating days of my life. Like if I had a top 3 or 5 days, I would definitely be competing.
Yeah.
It was just so freeing. It was like breaking free from a system, you know, this system that we're taught from a young age of go to school, work hard, get a good job, blah, blah, blah. Like it was one of the most freeing days of my life.
Is there a system that you want to break free from right now?
Ooh, that's a great question. Not really. I mean, I love what I do and I really don't feel like it's work.
That's good.
It's fun. You know, I guess if there was one, I guess continuing to get bigger and bigger and bigger, that way we can hire more and more people. I think the more leads you can generate, the more business you can get, the bigger a team you can get to cater to everything. And it helps alleviate some challenges, although it brings new challenges. Like
it does.
4 years ago, I wasn't spending like daily activity on recruiting. I spent some time on recruiting, but now it's like every day I'm sending recruiting messages out there, right? So like that's an example of as we grew, right? It generated less of some activity, but more of another. And I think sometimes people look at success as like a finish line or something they'll get to, and it never really, it's more like a journey that you're always on. And I don't think once you hit X level, your problems go away. They just change or get bigger or different.
Yeah. It's like success is the journey, not the destination.
Right.
Cause even as you were saying when we were at lunch, it was like, it would be really cool if I got the jet. Like, well, once you got the jet, then you're not going to be done.
Right. You got to pay for the fuel.
Yeah, pay for the fuel. Yeah. But even then, you're not going to be content. I mean, not the way I see that you're wired. I'm going to be like, well, should land the jet on the yacht.
Right.
That's big enough.
In aircraft carrier.
Something like that. Do you feel the bigger you guys get, do you feel more fulfillment from that?
Yeah, we get to help more people. So last year we helped almost 500 buyers and sellers. This year it'll be close to 1,000. Last year we coached a few agents. Now it's going to be a few hundred.
So
you know, the bigger you get, the more people you can help, the bigger your influence. I think it's more fun.
Yeah. I wonder with myself, like, as I continue to make things bigger, I'm like, is there going to be a point of that this is all going to end up making some big magic pixie dust go everywhere? Or I don't know. I just grapple with that from time to time. Like, what am I really looking to fully accomplish by having the company continue to grow and everything like that? And I'm like, well, for me now, it's just turned into more of like, how do we do the right thing? We live like virtuously, and how can I help prove that Steve Jobs was a dick, and you can run a business by not being a dick?
Yeah. Well, Gary Vee talks about that a lot
too. He does talk about that. And I love that he does talk about that. And I think more people should, but the damage that was done from him, and then the damage that you see done from, unfortunately, what Musk does.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Musk is.
I don't know a ton about him.
Yeah. Read his bio, man. It's he's a ruthless fucking dictator. Everybody is just.
I thought he was an alien.
He's a ruthless dictator alien. Yeah. From planet Krypton. And he basically, although he's done a lot of good, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's amazing. Like, American space exploration is back because of him. You know, Obama said, we're not doing this anymore. And he said, no, we are. And that's awesome. And Tesla, nobody can say that that's not an awesome thing for the good of the planet. The bummer deal on it is like how his team is like drove into the ground, and there is no exception. So he has like a Penny Potts assistant, and his Penny Potts assistant type girl, because he compares himself to Iron Man all the time after Robert Downey Jr. came and interviewed him. So he came and interviewed him to take on the role of Tony Stark before he took the first Iron Man movie. And that really got into Musk's head. And now if you walk into SpaceX, there's like giant Iron Man statues and shit. And he thinks he's Tony Stark pretty much, which he's the closest living thing there is to Tony Stark. But his assistant, Elon's, his Penny Potts, she was getting pretty burnt out working the 16-hour days she was. And he was just like, well, you haven't taken a vacation in, I forgot how many years, it's called 5 years. And do it. You need one. And I got it from here. And just go have a fun week off. So she goes and she takes her week off. And she comes back, and Musk realizes that he was able to do his job without her just fine. So she was fired. And it's just like, oh yeah, but he's building good stuff. And he's like, yeah, but he's also doing it in some ruthless measures where people, and the fact that they can't go as fast as him, because he's operating not just those two businesses, but he's got the freaking boring company, he has a flamethrower company, he has a solar city.
Yeah, for something, right?
The boring, like he's looking to solve the traffic problems by digging underneath, which when an earthquake happens, that's going to be a big problem. But, you know, it's awesome. But so he's managing all this stuff at these speeds where he's not sleeping or not really doing much of anything, and then to expect that us near mortals are going to continue to keep up with that, like he doesn't have any room for there's no compassion in him for a normal human to want to do normal human things. I think that's wrong, but I'm also not building a giant space company.
We're digging holes in the ground.
No, we're just doing a fine job marketing over here digitally. Anyway, though, but so you're looking to build, and as you're hiring people on, what do you think when it comes to professional development of your team? Do you invest much in it?
Oh yeah, I mean we spend a lot of time training them. We've got a sales manager now that trains. Her whole job is managing our agents, training them, weekly accountability meetings, training. We try to bring in people from real estate or other success or other industries that have been super successful to get them training. We take our team members to conferences. We spend a lot of time and money and just overall effort into training.
Why do you do that?
So it's one of the, you know, other than getting leads. You know, I think there's three things that a real estate company can deliver to the agents, and it's leads, training, and support. So can you get them in front of more people? Can you train them how to close more of those people? And can you get the support systems to make it easier for them to close more people?
Do you do trainings on helping your people have bigger social media footprints?
Yeah, we train them on social media. We try to get them involved with the company's videos and YouTube channels. So we recently did a day. It was pretty cool. We broke them into teams, groups of, I think we did three or four different groups. They each had a videographer assigned to them, and they would go do, we called it Blitz Day. They'd go make like five videos in one day on five different local businesses. And then when they're all said and done, we're going to like vote, like watch all the videos, vote on who did the best job.
So, when you guys end up doing that, how do you, and you have those five videos, so there's content that they can all share. How else do you do, like when you were saying that you get them involved in the YouTube and Facebook channels and stuff, how do you get them, how do you give them that content?
So we'll interview them on the podcast that we do. We'll teach them techniques that they can use to, you know, share what they're doing with their own group. So we try to get involved on our channel, and there's one like simple thing we did was just show them how to go live before an open house. Right. And we at a training conference, we saw this really cool, but simple thing where you just go live and you're like, hey, this is Dan from the Orange Line Living or Carrie Scholl team. I'm at the open house on 123 Main Street. If you can't make it out today, let me show you my five favorite things about this house. And we just taught them how to, like, simple framework that they can do, how to go live on that and download it. And then boom, now we've got IGTV content as well. So just like little things, like little tactical things like that. And just trying to continually get them more and more involved and have more people creating content.
What happens to the ones that do? Do you have ones that definitely do take you up on that? And do
yeah,
you do
I mean,
it?
The people that have been more involved have seen their business go up. So one agent in particular, Drew, I think last year, I'm going to get the numbers wrong, I think he maybe did 18 or 20 deals. This year he's on pace to do 36. And he's been involved in a lot of the local business type spotlight, highlight type videos. And his business has gone up. Now, do I know? I can't prove it was because he did this, but
yeah,
you know, with another guy who did 24 deals year one on our team, and left, and that's fine. Yeah, real estate's a free agent. But you know, one of the comments he made to someone else is like, "Well, I don't want to be involved in videos and blah blah blah." Like Drew is. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I mean, Drew went from 18 to 36. Like, if he put his left shoe on his right foot and vice versa, I would probably do that. And he's made a lot of videos, right? Like, yeah, you should model success. But the people that have gotten more involved in social media have seen their business go up. And I think it's a lot of things to take in consideration. Like, one, they're getting seen by more people in the market. And even if it's on our channel, they see, yeah, we put money behind all our posts. Mm-hmm. Most of our agents don't. So we put money behind the post. He gets seen, right? So I think there's that aspect of it. He's more seen in the community, but I think he's also probably more comfortable talking to people. Cause like when you're making videos, yeah, you're talking to people.
Yeah. You're right? Talking to yourself, but it's also the people,
right?
You're talking to that weird thing. Like it's a little, but if you get more and more comfortable doing it, you're more and more comfortable talking, period.
Right. So he's going to be more comfortable at open houses and at that initial client meetings that our inside sales agents book for them. So I'm sure that's had an overall effect on his conversion rate.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Cause if you think about it, if you're doing the top five things of a house, he's going around being like, all right, so this is, maybe he's not doing a live video. Maybe he's like shooting it and then he'll post it later. Cause he's just a little nervous about live for the first time. He's like, all right, this is the kitchen. And what I really like about that, and it's just like, is that this fridge has a, let me start that again. Okay. This fridge has an automatic, and he gets it down. Like this fridge is stainless steel, has a screen on it from Samsung. Look at that. You see what's in it without opening it. And he's just like, he has it flowing. And then when people come in, he has that flow already built in.
Right.
So that makes a lot of sense. You're basically practicing your pitch. Cause that's at the end of the day, I mean, real estate, you are doing sales. Like how good can you make this house look?
Yeah. I mean, you're just getting more comfortable, you know, talking to the cameras.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And there's, at some point, there's going to be people behind this camera, and right. So if I master it here, then when I'm talking to you face to face at the open house or an initial meeting that someone booked, I'll probably be more comfortable. And when you're more comfortable, you're going to do a better job.
That's true. Yeah, it's kind of funny with the practicing. When we do the short, like micro content, Mitch will set stuff up in here when we're doing like call to action ads from people who've watched different podcasts or things of that nature. And the first one or two or three are just like, just going through and screwing up. But eventually we nail it.
Right.
And we get it. And then when it comes time to do it again, like if Mitch is like, well, if we just do this part, I'm not doing it three or four times to get that again. I'm typically, it's the next time I already have it nailed in my mind and what we need to say. And then we did another one where we switched out the background that we're A/B testing the bookcase compared to the office out there. So we're A/B testing like what's going to convert better, me saying the same thing in front of a bookcase or me saying the same thing in front of my team. I don't know what the results are yet because we just started that. But the point is that when I went back out there to do that, it wasn't, well, let's practice it seven times because it was already memorized.
Right.
So it's just practice makes perfect. What a crazy concept. I've never heard that before. It's great. So what do you want to do in 2020? You see what's happening in 2019. We're almost, we're over getting halfway close. Through. Yeah, yeah, it's the eighth month. So you have the footprint that you've built as far as content goes. How much, well, as of right now, what is a typical content play that you're making a day or a week, let's say, across all channels, not just Instagram?
It's probably like hundreds of posts.
Hundreds?
Know? Yeah.
Wow. Okay. What would be the ballpark breakdown of those hundreds?
Well, we've got five different channels we promote. My personal, Carrie's personal, two real estate sales brands, and then Hyperfast Agent, our real estate coaching brand. So there's five channels, and they're easily like each getting 2 to 4 posts per day on each platform. Mm-hmm. So typically we're getting on each one, we're getting 3 Instagram posts, 4, 5, 6 to 10 stories. Probably at least 10 interactions on Twitter, 3 to 6 on Facebook, a couple of YouTubes a week at least, podcasts. So we're on all of them really, except for Snapchat. We don't do much on Snapchat. We we don't do a ton on Pinterest, mm-hmm. but we're pretty big on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, and LinkedIn articles and blogs.
So what do you want to do what do you see coming for 2020?
I'm still kind of watching voice, so I don't know what's going to happen with that, but I think at any minute we might need to be ready to jump in. You know, Gary Vee's talked about doing the flash briefings mm-hmm. on Alexa. Have you heard of that?
I haven't heard of his flash briefings, like his own flash briefings, where it's Gary Vee talking.
Yeah, so I guess I don't use it a ton personally.
I got the Alexas out of my house.
But I think you don't want Jeff.
Yeah, there's been a bit too much where it's kind of break. I do still, because I'm in marketing, I do have one in the kitchen that I play with here. But it's broken my trust a little bit.
So I guess there's the potential that someday, and it could be a lot sooner than later, Alexa will own the time of when you wake up, when you get home, and before you go to bed, and you'll talk to it for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, maybe 5 minutes max.
Mm-hmm.
And Alexa is going to tell you basically what to think about on your drive to work, or after you get home from your drive from work, or before you go to bed. And the flash briefings, you can customize them, but it would tell you like your weather, your favorite news source, or whatever it is. And so Gary Vee's got some examples that he started to put out these flash briefings where if you subscribe to it, you know, you'll get it in the times you listen to on Alexa, and it'll tell you, you know, like, hey, it's Gary. Make sure you check out this podcast today to learn about this. It's just little stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. So he's talked about how voice could become this huge thing, but it could also be like virtual reality, right? Like people have been saying, I feel like for 10 years that virtual reality is going to be a game changer. It hasn't yet.
No,
but maybe voice is. So, you know, I'm definitely like keeping an eye on that. I think we're going to increase the use of messenger tools, for all businesses.
Yeah.
Continue to build out our own internal staff. So we're gonna need more agents to support them. So right now we're at, I believe, like 45 agents, and I don't know where we'll end up going into 2020. I would certainly hope by the end of 2020 that we're at 100 agents, but it's a tough industry. It's a tough industry for that, just because we're not, you know, most brokerages, the model is like sign up anyone and everyone.
Yeah.
Get to 250 agents, and who cares if some produce and some don't. Our model is a little different because we're providing leads, training, and support at such a high system. We want all of our agents productive. If they're not closing 20, 24 deals a year with the aspirations of going even higher, we really don't want them on our team. So the success rate on our team is much higher than the industry average. Industry average success rate overall is like less than 10%. It's very, very low. Mm-hmm. Ours is around 50%, but it still makes for, growth. Like we got to hire 20 right now to get to 50 probably, right? Because if we hire 20 and go from 40 to 60, 10 of them won't make it. It's just, right. A numbers game.
Right.
And so we're going to have to probably, to get to 100, we probably need to hire 100, 120 people in mm-hmm. the next 18 months or whatever it is till the end of 2020. So that's our goal. And really 2020 would set us up for our overall goal, if we hit the numbers on recruiting, to become the number one real estate team in the world. So last year for 2018 stats, we were number 33. We did about 300 million. 32 people beat us. This year, I think we're on pace to hit 400 to 500 million.
Wow.
And I think we'll be in the top 15 or so.
In the country?
Yeah.
Wow.
And we're doing it a lot different. Like half of the teams ahead of us are doing what's called expansion teams. And while unfortunately real estate rankings are based just on sold volume, I wish it was more on commission that you kept or profit. I think
that's how it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the money you're making. Yeah.
A lot of the teams that are like half the teams that are beating us have expansion teams.
I don't know what that means.
So they have their core business, mm-hmm. and then they add new cities. A lot of them do that. Like, they're growing just for growth's sake. So they kind of partner with a guy, you know, be like me partnering with someone in Portland, even though my business is in Washington, D.C., and just saying like, yeah, I'll help you with marketing. I'll give you some training, but just give me like a 6% or 10% like franchising fee or expansion team fee. Like, so I think there's a lot of people that are running these expansion teams to drive their sold numbers up, but they're not making a ton of money off it, if any.
Yeah.
So half the teams that are ahead of us, I know, are doing it. You know, they've got expansion teams. So
you thought about expanding from DC?
No, not yet. Maybe, but I want to maximize what I can do in my market. I think a smarter expansion than partnering with a guy in Denver, I think a smarter expansion would be like, okay, let me go one or two counties over, right? So and keep it closer. Or why don't I expand to my own market? Like, there's 10 zip codes in Arlington County. I'm number one in six of them. Well, why don't I become number one in the other four too?
Sure.
Like, I think that's a lot easier, more profitable, and more real. So
less travel time.
You know, I don't want to call people's numbers fake, but if you look at who's doing their business all in one market, we're already, based on last year's numbers, already like in the top 15, 16. So our goal is to become number one in the world out of one market. And I think we're 2 years away from doing that.
Yeah, and you're on the bleeding edge of technology every time we talk, so that's what we get into. I mean, talking about Alexa and having like briefings on what kind of houses somebody's looking for if they're in that area. I know that makes sense. Like, we were looking in stuff like that for auto, like, hey, Alexa, I'm looking for an Outback, and I have a budget of $30,000.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Subaru Ben has a skill that pops out.
That next word is very important, as, you know, Gary's said before.
Yeah. So, and then, like, as you continue to be on the bleeding edge, also, like, how we've gotten into getting into the weeds on, like, Messenger, the stuff that we've ended up been seeing from Facebook and Instagram, F8 basically taking Messenger so seriously. And when we're applying it, we're like, holy crap, like, this is legitimately replace some top-notch landing pages for some multi-million dollar companies. And that was the way. It was landing pages. Like, if that ends up becoming a thing, and that's just one aspect of it. Like, if all of a sudden you don't need to go to a landing page and you talk to a bot and you're going through it and a live person come in or not, but that person can then, the company can retake up the conversation where it left off, that'd be like somebody going through your landing page and instead of a pixel retargeting them because you know where they got to and then you get an ad in front of them, instead you're just like, ping, hey, just remind you, we're right. You almost had your credit card out. Let me give you two other reasons why you should, right? And they're like, yeah, you're right. That is where the conversation led off. And before, they're like, what was that about? Was I on that landing page? And then if you combine that with that, that's what's going to end up, the smart companies are the ones that are like Delta, JetBlue, no, not JetBlue, Air France, Delta, and T-Mobile are replacing their, not completely replacing, but customer service with Messenger. And now it's real time, that whole wait time on Delta, which, by the way, their wait time is awful when you call. It is the worst.
Right.
But if you go on Facebook Messenger, there is no wait time and they'll replace your ticket. And they got that tip from Air France and they're just watching their conversions go through roofs. Now, so that starts catching on. And Facebook's goal of replacing the phone with Messenger, like they told me when I was first at their campus 5.5 years ago and I rolled my eyes. It's like, yeah, okay, whatever. That and email, rolled my eyes at both of them. Now I'm still not completely sold, but I see it. I see what's possible. So, it's just an exciting time to be living in, to be like, hey, we have this Alexa, this Messenger, and then the VR thing you're talking about, that's got Facebook money behind it too.
Right.
And the Oculus Quest they came out with, now you don't have to be plugged into a desktop. Because that was a problem before, was that you're doing that. But as Gary V, as we continue to quote him, when he's talking about the contact lens thing, if you get the technology that well, which at the rate that things are shrinking when it comes to how we can take technology and just make it more and more compact, like what took us to the moon is now our phones, the same technology. Well, if you end up doing that with the VR headset.
You think we really went to the moon?
Do you, Dan? I'm drinking water. I need whiskey for this conversation. I don't have a good enough reason why not to, except for when I was young. I think when that Fox special came out, I was probably like 14 or 15 and it left an impression on me. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. That was like when it first like really came out. So that was like 15 years ago. It made a bit of an impression, but then as I went through and started looking at all the facts as to why the things were doing that, I was just like, yeah, it's kind of seems pretty likely. But at the same time, we've also sent, like, Japan got a satellite out there. I don't know why they haven't sent us shots back of the moon landing yet, because we left the shit out there. There's plenty of human American garbage supposedly on the moon. So, like, the rover that we brought out there that they drove around on and all that stuff, that's still there. I don't know. Let's see some pictures of it. So I go back and forth. I don't know if you want to keep on going down that road or we just send it. We could have a lot more fun if you want to go down the...
So moon technology is now shrunk into our phone.
Yeah, or what I was also thinking was that fun conversation we were having at lunch earlier about just like Nike capitalizing on the Kaepernick thing and the ideas of actually getting behind one strong stance and then getting everybody mad at you. But then you capture that percent. It's like, what happens when you say that I'm for Trump and you end up pissing off a bunch of people, but the people that are for Trump are all now fully for you? Or now you say I'm for Bernie Sanders and now you really piss off the Trump crowd, but now all the people that are for Bernie Sanders are behind you. And what makes your business grow up more? Or do you just not touch that with a 10-foot pole? I've been interested with that because of what Nike's been doing. We're doing the Kaepernick thing.
And they keep going down that path more and more.
Yeah, they didn't just do it once. No, they went all in.
I think their business, I don't follow, but I think the business has gone up.
It has. Right? The stock has been going up, but even after the whole shoe thing. Like canceling like the country's 4th of July shoe, which I'm guessing they only made that to make this play. That's my guess. Like, we're going to do this Kaepernick thing.
Now it's selling on eBay for like $4,000 or $5,000.
Yeah.
That shoe.
That is an interesting concept. I'm too scared to touch something like that though. I don't think I have the cojones to do that.
Well, that's kind of a sad reflection of just where things are today. If you don't agree 100% with most people's ideology, they just can't tolerate it.
Yeah,
I think as a whole, everyone should be more tolerant.
Well, absolutely. That's the problem.
If you and I think differently on something, okay, fine. As long as your belief doesn't
harm you,
hurt me.
Yeah.
Why should I give a shit?
You shouldn't. Yeah. As long as it doesn't. But people are under the perception that, if you end up believing in that, it's going to cause all this harm, but it hasn't been. Like, we were under this false perception that by now the entire country would be burning in flames and everything like that if Trump was in office this long. Everything seems to be okay. Everything seems to be fine. I'm not saying he's a great president. I'm just saying we're not living in apocalyptic times. So
just wait.
Yeah, boy, just wait till the re-election. All right. Well, it's been a joy having you on, Dan, and I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.